Welcome to the HKW, to the Anthropocene campus. Let me also express my excitement about the fact that we can start this campus today and be together for the next 9 days, which will be exciting days as far as we know from the programs, from the people who are with us tonight. My name is Bernd Scherer. I'm the director of the HKW and to some extent responsible for the Anthropocene project. The Anthropocene campus actually is part of the Anthropocene report, one of the highlights actually of the Anthropocene report. And this report, we connect two meanings. One meaning is it refers to a process. This process started about 3 years ago, actually, when in 2012, together with the Max Planck Institute for the History of Science, we started workshops where we invited, on the one side, younger researchers and also very established researchers in order to explore new forms of cooperation and new forms of knowledge production. This actually led to the opening of the Anthropocene last year in January 2013, where we invited directors of leading research institutes and researchers who were dealing in their research with Anthropocene-related issues. And out of the discussions in closed workshops with these people, we found that it is important to create a kind of new space, a space outside the traditional disciplines in order to explore exactly these issues of new forms of cooperation, new forms of knowledge production. And the campus, which we are going to realize in the next 9 days, you can look at this kind of space to create new forms of interaction with each other and new forms of knowledge production. And let me here also express my thanks on the one side to the Max Planck Institute for the History of Science, Professor Renn, who is with us and will speak after me, who from their side was very supportive in this whole process. Let me also thank the institutions who are supporting from the outside to some extent this process, but are very much interested in it. On the one side, the Thyssen Foundation, and on the other side, the Schering Foundation. And we will have a moment on Monday together with the Schering Foundation where they present a project which shows also the interconnectedness in thinking between this foundation and the HKW. And I also, of course, would like to thank my whole team who prepared this wonderful project. And you all participating in it know that it was not such an easy one-shot project, but really a quite complicated process. I especially thank Katrin Klingan, who is in charge of the whole project, but also Christopher Soll, who is, so to say, the diplomat in between the sciences. He works for the Max Planck Institute and the House of World Cultures, HKW, and Roman Prinzanik, who moderated this whole process. But the report, the Anthropocene report, refers also to another meaning, and here I come a little bit more to the content of the program. It refers, as you probably all know, to the Kafka novel, the report to the Academy. And you remember the situation, the ape was asked to narrate his story, how he became a civilized being in front of the Academy. And at the beginning he was quite surprised, but he had learned that it is better for him to comply with the desires of his masters. And so he starts to narrate. And he narrates his story, imitating human beings, how he started to know how to spit, how to drink alcohol. And also he started to reflect on the notion of freedom, realizing that the only moment he realized freedom was when he was an ape. So what he does in his narration is to some extent mirror the other side. he is mirroring the ape-like behavior of human beings, the members of the academy on the other side. And the members of the academy looking into the mirror were quite irritated by what they saw. So the Kafka novel, what it is addressing, what it is pinpointing at, is a crucial moment in the development of modernity, a moment of interference, when the old categories don't work anymore, when the boundaries between nature and culture, between apes and human beings, are to some extent blurred. They don't work anymore in this situation. When we come now to another moment where this interference in the sciences created a specific moment, and this is, you can read in these diagrams, which played a quite important role already end of the 90s, when Earth scientists were to some extent listening to the Earth, were communicating with the Earth, and finding out that major parameters in Earth development showed quite interesting, quite disturbing signals. What you can see in these diagrams, as I said, are major parameters. There are much more than this represented here on this board. For example, the CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, the overfishing of oceans, humans on the Earth, so demographic development of the Earth, the loss of biodiversity. When they started to look at these diagrams, as I said, they also got irritated of what is happening. And this, to some extent, was a basis for Paul Crutzen's suggestion to create or to use the notion of the Anthropocene, meaning by that, on the one side, that humans starts more and more to shape the Earth to an extent that it becomes a geological characteristic of the Earth. But what these diagrams also show, and as you know probably all, they represent to some extent what the scientists name as the big acceleration. They show that there is that humans, by their actions, create a kind of destabilization of a system, the Earth system, which for quite some years were more or less or relatively stable. This is one of the characteristics of the Holocene we used to live in, or we thought we are living in, that it has a kind of more or less stable system of the climate, and because of that also because certain the ecological environments which are created or influenced, interfered by the climate. So what we have here is also this kind of interference, this situation of interference where, let's say, a stable system doesn't work anymore. And to just pinpoint at one important aspect of that is what was important for the development of the sciences, but also to some extent for the development of the arts, was to some extent a kind of stable concept or a concept of a kind of stable object world. As we all know, is that the disciplines in the sciences, one major task of the disciplines is to define the objects, to develop conceptual methods to create, constitute an ontology in the sciences. And that took part on the basis of this kind of more or less stable material world. As far as the arts are concerned, what happened in the museum is a similar kind of process, that taking out the object out of its interconnectedness in the world and presented it in a kind of empty space, in a decontextualized situation, was also a strategy to stabilize the object. So what happens now is that these processes of stabilization, where the scientists could speak about the world, and in the museum you could look at the object, that this becomes blurred, that this object world becomes more and more fluid. And what it also means is that the notion of a clear division between the cultural side and the natural side of things are also getting blurred, which was very important, as you know, in the development of modernity in itself, these kind of dualisms where human beings imagine themselves to some extent as actors behaving in front of a kind of natural scene which is more or less constant. And this, so this whole situation of kind of constant natural scene got by these processes destabilized. If you look at how the scientists got to these notions, it's quite interesting because it's really based on a kind of communication model, communication with the Earth, because they took signals from all over the Earth and put, so to say, the symptoms together. They collected data. And what this data produced is a situation of noise, of showing, referring to that the old categories, the old boundaries which we in which we use to define the world and understand the world did not work anymore. So what we are in at the moment is this situation of noise. And in communication theory, noise is the situation where you have the greatest possibilities. So that is the situation we are in. And how do we deal with them, with this situation? And I just at the end of my talk would like to mention three aspects which to me are important also for the campus in the next days come out of this picture I just developed. On the one side, and I mentioned that already, is the old object world we lived in was constructed by the disciplines as we know them in the sciences, and evidently these disciplines don't reflect anymore the situation we are in. So what we need is not to give up completely disciplines, but we need a space where we explore in a new way our interrelatedness with the material world. This is number one. So we need a space where we go work beyond the disciplines in order to create kind of knowledge which may then feed into the development of new disciplines, for example. So it's not an argument against disciplines in itself, it's just in order to pinpoint to the fact that the old disciplines don't reflect anymore the situation we are in. Second point is, which is important, is what I mentioned already, that this clear distinction between material processes and human actions don't work anymore. So we have to look at new forms of understanding our being in the world and describing it. And third, what is also to some extent an anthropocenic insight, and the anthropocene thinking directly points at, is when you know about this interference, this interrelatedness between human actions and human thinking, of course, is part of these human actions, and the material processes, is that you cannot look at science as something which is just observing from the outside the world. It's part of the world it creates. So instead of having this kind of notion of the academy, such as Kafka developed it, where the scientists are looking to the world, we have to develop a kind of new understanding of the sciences as being one actor, one protagonist in the world, as being interwoven with other processes. And for that, I would suggest to use the notion of a forum, where the different actors in these processes, and these could be also objects, but these can be also other actors in society, come together and discuss the way we would like to see the world, we would like to understand ourselves within the world, and the sciences are just one actor, one protagonist amongst others in this kind of forum. And this is basically the way I would also understand our next days, and this was also one reason why for us it became very important to take case studies as reference points for the projects, that we not just discuss on a theoretical level the issues we are interested in, but we refer them directly to concrete case studies, where very concrete situations, where it may be at the beginning not be clear who are the actors really, who are the objects acted on in these situations, become the reference point of our discussions. With these few remarks, I welcome you again, looking forward, and I hope we have quite some exciting days together. Thank you very much.
So also on behalf of the Max Planck Institute for the History of Science, one of the partners in this project, I'm very happy to welcome you here. These are exciting days ahead of us. We have all for a long time prepared for us. And we're happy that you are here. We are grateful that you have come, taken up the challenge to participate in a very unusual curriculum event, in a very unusual campus event. Let me also confess that for a historian of science, this is a unique occasion. We are usually not involved in such events. It's thanks to the wonderful cooperation with the Haus der Kulturen der Welt that we can undertake this, can, as historians, come so close to practice what we preach sometimes, that historical experiences may serve as a resource for addressing some of the challenges of the future. And this cooperation that we have had over the last year has had a certain convergence effect, as I can see from, you know, the fact that Bernd Scherer said just many of the things that I want to say, perhaps in other words, to you. And this convergence is part of a reflection process that has going on in a wonderful community, and I'm grateful to all those who have been part of this community. As I said, it's really a wonderful opportunity for historians of science, and I see some of my colleagues here, to come out of the ivory tower, to dare to come out of the ivory tower to participate in exhibitions and in curriculum events such as this. So I basically want to say three things, and I think structurally they are very much the same as those that Bernd Scherer also told you. I would like to strengthen a little bit the emphasis on science. And I want to say three things about science. First of all, science clearly has played a big part in the coming into being of the Anthropocene. So science has had a big, for whatever you see here, science has had a big responsibility. I'm personally convinced, but that's an open subject of research, that the famous scientific revolution of the early modern period was not just an intellectual event, but has left an important trace and has done much to prepare the later industrial revolution, which has been a classical starting point for these acceleration processes that we see here. Think of the mechanization of industry, which probably wouldn't have been possible without, you know, the development of mechanics. Or think of the development of chemical fertilizers, which have a great responsibility for the fact that we can nourish such a large population today and a growing population over the last century. And or think of the use of fossil fuels, of course, at the core of the Industrial Revolution, later nuclear power. All of these are, to some extent, products of science. And as I said, science has a big responsibility. And so I think science also has a big responsibility in solving some of the problems which are central to the process of the Anthropocene. I think the famous ozone hole problem is a good example for that. It's clearly a product of chemical products of humankind. It also has been solved by the investment into more science, but not just more science, more scientific knowledge, but also the right kind of knowledge. And I think that is perhaps the greatest challenge for me if I consider the Anthropocene. What kind of knowledge do we need to master the challenges of the Anthropocene to make sure that humankind will be able not only to shape the world on a planetary scale, but to survive this shaping, to live with this shaping? What kind of knowledge do we have to produce? What kind of knowledge can we produce? And so the Anthropocene definitely changes the outlook on science. It's clear that we are faced with a complexity of an unprecedented scale. Even the Anthropocene itself, as you know, as a concept, is still being debated among geologists. So the first anthropological scientific challenge is the existence of the Anthropocene. But then, as I said, the enormous complexity, the interconnectivity of so many processes of a global scale, and then the fact, and Bernd has already emphasized it, that we now more clearly than ever realize that science is a human product, that we are not just faced with a nature out there to be captured in objective universal concepts, but all of this is to a great deal man-made. Nature to a great deal, as we are facing it on this planet today, has been shaped by human intervention, and certainly this is the case for the sciences. And for a historian, this is of course a very important insight that, you know, science is a deeply historical product with all its claims to universality. And now, and this is what I meant when I say we can now finally practice to some extent what we preach, we can now perhaps employ some of these insights into the human-made historical nature of science in order to face the challenges of the Anthropocene. Some of the things have become clear. You cannot, for instance, just take solutions that have been developed for the first world, technical solutions of whatever, medical solutions, water management, and just transfer them into different cultures. So one of the things that we have learned over the last century, I would say, or so, is that scientific problems are local problems. They cannot be isolated, and that is, again, a point that Bernd has already stressed. They cannot be isolated from specific social, cultural, and even environmental context. So it makes no sense to bring some of the disciplines together only at the end of a long process of cognition and then to specialize the condition. Some of these conditions, the contextual conditions, are so fundamental that we have to consider them from the outset before even trying to muster the knowledge that we need to address them. So we have to think of a science that is much more contextualized, much more in flux, much more flexible than the science and the scientific disciplines we have become used to. And this is also why this curriculum project is to a high degree an experimental process. We don't know what, as I said before, what kind of knowledge we need, nor do we know of what kind of knowledge and how we have to organize it in order to transmit and to share two important processes that are often neglected by the historians of science who focus on the novelty in the invention, but the history of science is very much also about the implementation of knowledge, the transmission of knowledge, the transformation of knowledge, the organization of knowledge in disciplines. And certainly those, the disciplines, are not a universally given structure of rationality. They also are in flux. And one of the challenges that we have to face is how is the knowledge that we need for the Anthropocene to be organized in the future? Which structures are needed? Some things I think I know, I'm convinced we need openness. You know, we cannot probe, we cannot explore the new kinds of connectivity that we surely need in order to address science, to address problems in a more contextualized way without making scientific results open access. This is why I have been engaged for many years in the open access movement, in order to free that potential that we need in order to address this connectivity. Other things I think are entirely unclear. Certainly, boundaries will have to shift. Boundaries between the natural sciences, the social sciences, and the humanities, but also boundaries between science and science policy. We have to realize much closer what are the the implementation processes of technical solutions? What are the economic processes behind it? What are the conditions under which knowledge is produced? Think of something like pharmaceutical knowledge, which is produced to a large extent not by institutions like the Max Planck Society responsible for foundational research, but is produced by the pharmaceutical industry. Now, the pharmaceutical industry is very much geared to the markets of the first world. Much of the knowledge that we would need in order to address some of the global challenges, things like multiply resistant tuberculosis, is it really produced? Do we really have the right structures in order to cope with these problems, the right knowledge producing structures? And I think very much the same is true for issues such as the energy supply, the global issues of energy supply. It's not just a question of having the right solutions locally defined and then transmitting them to the world. It's a question of creating the conditions for producing the right kind of knowledge and transmitting and implementing the right kind of knowledge. So many of these issues, and this is, of course, I admit, is an Enlightenment position, are issues of knowledge after all, and we are here together, I believe, in an experiment of the joint exploration of forms of knowledge production, and this is cannot be a top-down process. This needs to be a participatory, bottom-up, eye-to-eye endeavor, and I would like to encourage you to be as active as possible, to be as engaged and as critical as you can in the coming days. And I would just like to close with a personal remark. The whole idea of addressing this issue of knowledge production on the side of the curriculum, what kind of curricula do we need? You know, universities all over the world are mushrooming like we were in a flat world, as if globalization has led to a world that is everywhere the same. But of course, it's not. And so Yehuda Elkanah, the great historian and philosopher of science, who has unfortunately died a couple of years ago, addressed this issue of diversifying curricula in order to address these various globally very, very diverse contexts, rather than this flat world type of universities that are mushrooming. And so we thought in the course of this process that the Anthropocene would be a wonderful subject to implement some of his ideas about the reform of the curriculum, where he meant to bring science closer to challenging problems in this diverse way. And so you are part of this experiment. And I'm grateful again to those who have made it possible, to the organizers, to the go-betweens, to Katrin Klingern, who has wonderfully introduced you earlier, Bernd Scherer I've already mentioned. I want to specifically mention Christoph Rosol again, who has become part of the two institutions. And with all the global processes we look at, in the end, sometimes it's the people who make things possible. And I would like to express my warmest thanks to all those people, and I could name many other names here, that have made this enterprise possible. So I wish you fruitful, productive, enjoyable hours over the next days, and I hope to meet many of you on a personal level in the days to come. Thank you for your attention.